Please welcome Executive Director of Urban Land Institute Atlanta, Ms. Sarah Kirsch.
Good morning. I am going to sit because we are going to have a smaller, more conversational panel. We are the final conversation that stands between you and the green beer that Susan promised. But I think a really terrific, sort of practical and tactical conversation to end what has been a really important but not always uplifting conversation. So please join me in welcoming Derek Duckworth to the stage. Yes. Derek is a realtor with the Beltline team of Area West Realty. Derek is a resident of the historic Adair Park neighborhood in Southwest Atlanta, where he serves as president of the Adair Park Today Neighborhood Association. Derek is founder of Committed to Communities, which we look forward to hearing more about. It launched in 2010 in partnership with local investors, communities, and real estate professionals, created to promote home ownership, which we've had great conversations about, really focused in Southwest Atlanta to return those neighborhoods to strength and vibrancy. So look forward to hearing from Derek. Joining Derek is John O'Callaghan, who is president and CEO of Atlanta Neighborhood Development Partnership, ANDP. John leads the organization's policy, lending, and housing development programs aimed at ensuring mixed-income housing opportunities near job centers across metro Atlanta. As you all probably all know, if not before today, then certainly today, ANDP is focused on addressing the region's foreclosure crisis and its impact on neighborhoods. ANDP is one of the nation's largest nonprofit redevelopers of vacant foreclosed homes. And I know we are all very grateful for the leadership that both John and Derek are providing on these really critical issues. So as I said, we're gonna make this a conversation. We hope you all can join in the conversation. We're going to hear from both Derek and John and have a moderated discussion before we invite you to the microphones. This panel is really focused on one of the three strategies that Piece by Piece has identified to address creating value in underwater neighborhoods. The first is modifying loans for existing homeowners. We've talked a good bit about that this morning. The second is what we're going to be talking about here, which is creating value in underwater neighborhoods through things like foreclosure redevelopment, demolition of vacant properties, neighborhood cleanup, beautification, marketing, branding, and certainly, hearkening back to our first panel from this morning, crime reduction and strong code enforcement strategies. The third piece of that three-pronged approach is increase in home ownership rates. We've certainly talked a good bit about that this morning, but really want to focus on, you know, what can everyone do individually and collectively to focus on increasing these values. John and Derek both bring perspectives of both place-based and broader regional systemic approaches. So we want to hear a little bit, you know, we know this is a community-grounded initiative, but we also know, just hearing from the panel before us, that there are some much broader policy systemic issues that need to be addressed. So first, you know, Derek, through your work with Committed to Communities, you're very well positioned to talk about the place-based strategies, specifically focusing on Southwest Atlanta and along the Atlanta Beltline. Can you tell us a little bit about Committed to Communities and how you've been successful in making an impact?
Definitely. I appreciate the opportunity. I want to thank Susan and John for continuing to push Piece by Piece forward. It's been outstanding. It's great to see so many people show up today. I actually live in Southwest Atlanta. I moved to Southwest Atlanta actually having a background in HR. I had no intentions to first get into real estate, but I live probably 3.5-4 miles from here, and my neighborhood's one of the hardest hit neighborhoods. When we talked about those 9 out of 10 zip codes that have lost equity in their properties, my zip code in my neighborhood is definitely one of them. And as a realtor and as a professional in that neighborhood, you know, there's pretty amazing things going on in these neighborhoods, and letting people know about the resources, whether it's through Federal Home Loan Bank or ANDP, different sponsored events, the resources really give an opportunity for people to make an impact and stay where they're at, right? So a lot of people are really underwater. As a matter of fact, most of the people that moved to my neighborhood probably 8 or 9 years ago probably bought at the top of the market, somewhere around $200,000, and today we're getting back to those numbers, but the last 3 or 4 years, properties have been selling in the $50,000, $60,000, and $70,000 price range, if not a little bit lower. So what I did and what other real estate professionals, whether it's lenders, Invest Atlanta, ANDP, Wells Fargo, and a lot of other corporate partners, we got together and figured out a way to showcase these neighborhoods. So the idea behind Committed to Communities was not just to show open houses and do open houses, but to also let people know about the resources in these neighborhoods and the amenities in the neighborhoods. So whether it's down payment assistance that's available for people to move into these neighborhoods, or whether it's schools that make an impact, and there are a lot of great charter schools as well as schools like Perkinson Elementary that are really doing astonishing things to return or reinvigorate this elementary school, we tried to figure out a way to let people know about these opportunities, about the amenities in the neighborhood. I specialize in Beltline communities, so to let people know that the Beltline's coming through these neighborhoods, so it doesn't just include Grant Park and Inman Park and Ansley Park, but it also includes neighborhoods like Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is probably the hardest hit neighborhood in the country as far as mortgage fraud and foreclosure. But it also sits less than two to three miles from downtown Atlanta. It probably has the longest continuous track of commercial real estate along the Beltline. So to let people know about these neighborhoods and these opportunities is kind of what Committed Communities created in the very beginning. And there are other resources. I'm excited to, you know, when I listened to the earlier panel, it'd be great to see if I could leverage these opportunities with the other panelists that were up here earlier to let people know in these neighborhoods that there are opportunities to take advantage of these incentives to stay in their neighborhood. So I'm going to figure out a way to talk to everybody that was up here earlier. But that's kind of a little bit of a background of Committed to Communities.
Okay. And John, did you want to tell us a little bit more about the foreclosure redevelopment program and specifically ANDP's work in Douglas County?
Yeah, and did you go through your slides? Why don't you hit the next one?
Okay, I didn't know if it made sense for me to go through the slides right now. What we're actually showing is I kind of put together a few quick slides that kind of talk about the real estate values in Adair Park and the impact in the last 3 or 4 years. Adair Park being one of those neighborhoods that was hardest hit, but is also doing an extremely good job of rebounding. And I wanted to compare it to another neighborhood, which is Collier Hills, which is kind of more Buckhead. So I kind of showed the four most recent sales in these neighborhoods and what the volume of sales have been as well as the prices. So what the slide is showing us right here is how many houses have sold since 2012 in Adair Park. You can see there were 14 sales in 2012, and it's probably stayed around 14 to 20. Most recently, I believe there's actually 9 contracts today, but there have already been 2 sales in the neighborhood. So it's showing a little bit of the volume right there. And the next slide actually talks about the prices, right? So we go from 2012, when the prices were somewhat closer to, like, I don't know if I can read those numbers, about 35,000. And today, you know, we've gone up to almost 140, which is kind of interesting because I actually have 3 contracts myself that are in the 195 range. But you can see this neighborhood rebounding and stabilizing, yet the prices still stay affordable. But when you compare it to another neighborhood like Collier Hills, like I said, just south of Buckhead, it's actually still a Beltline neighborhood. You see they've kind of had the same volume of sales in the last 4 years, but at the same time, their prices have really kind of stabilized, haven't really gone up, and haven't seen the impact. But the opportunity is really in Southwest Atlanta today and in these other hardest-hit neighborhoods, and we're actually figuring out ways to turn these around.
Wow.
Thank you for that opportunity.
That's powerful. So in metropolitan Atlanta, we have 1,000 or more neighborhoods at risk, and what we need is a lot of Derek's and a lot of others in this room that are working in partnership to tell their own neighborhood story. ANDP has been involved in partnering with local governments, partnering with Home Depot Foundation on veteran homes, partnering with Wells Fargo and Bank of America on donation homes, partnering with private sector players on how can we get their expertise, trying to serve within the city of Atlanta, but also trying to serve within the other counties, predominantly in South Metro, but also up the I-85 corridor going into Gwinnett and the portions of South Cobb that are hit as well, because we need systemic answers to deal not only with one neighborhood. Your one neighborhood is coming back, but it's tied to real estate success for the overall market. And so as we lift one, we lift the other. I was with a reporter during one of the breaks who said, okay, we've got everyone together, but isn't it overwhelming because we've just gone through the presentation to kick off? Isn't it overwhelming how bad it is, and what can this group sort of do? And I think many of the folks in the room are here because we like a challenge, the fact that we can't make the perfect world or we can't overnight bring back the values in all the neighborhoods does not mean that we aren't going to give it a damn good try, which is what we're trying to do. And so we do need systemic issues, and a little bit later on maybe we'll talk. There was a great question on appraisal. That's a systemic issue. Tax policy is a systemic issue. But in our work at ANDP, we stumbled across this value proposition that you found in your neighborhood, and it's pretty powerful. So the issue is, this is sort of our theory, in these neighborhoods, very few quality homes are selling. The reality is the quality homes, if you owned a quality home in your neighborhood or much of this underwater area, and you've been there for a long time and you didn't get foreclosed on, then you aren't going to sell it now because you're underwater and it's at a loss. And even if you sold it in a short sale, it would mess up your credit and you probably wouldn't have the cash to go buy a new home. So you're keeping. There are quality homes, they just aren't for sale. Well, how about new home construction? We were seeing that before. Well, there is no new home construction except for some highly gentrifying areas, perhaps in the city of Atlanta and small portions of DeKalb County. So those lift values. What about the rehab of quality homes? Surprisingly, the private market is not in that space. Equity investors are doing rehab or bringing value, but that value is not captured anywhere. So one issue is the right balance of rental and home ownership. Even if we had the right balance, that value they're bringing isn't captured because there isn't a resale. We talked to the appraisers don't catch it because there isn't a permit pulled. So in the market, the value is determined each year by the homes that did sell. Well, what's selling is the foreclosed burnout homes that the equity investors didn't buy at the courthouse steps. So those are really low values. And the appraisal industry, we'll talk a little bit more, but really is not set to go and distinguish very well, in my opinion, between the burnout foreclosed home and a quality home that sells. So we found initially through the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, we were like, wow, this person was renting for $1,000 a month for their family of two or three people, and we were able to provide a home ownership opportunity for $600. We thought that was really powerful. We served a veteran or a teacher or someone who lived in one county and wanted to be closer to work in another, so there were wonderful stories. But we started to uncover that when we sold that first home, and we oftentimes couldn't sell it for what it really cost to rehab, that's the reason we had the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, but we would push and try to get back as much as we could and talk to the appraisers. And once that one home sold, the values changed. And so we have been doing this over a number of years, and we were approached by Georgia Tech do-gooder student group called Epic Intentions. And when I was in college, we licked envelopes and did stuff like that. And the college kids today are like, no, we want to use all our skill set, so how can we help you? We said, well, help us measure how we're lifting values through essentially which is a scattered program. We were going into subdivisions and buying a couple of homes a year, rehabbing them, creating two new market values, and coming back the next year and doing it again, and coming back the next year and the fourth year. And so we found a friendly tax assessor, which is always good to have, in Douglas County. We'd done some quality work there, as we had in DeKalb and Fulton and City of Atlanta, but we had a friendly tax assessor. So we went there, and they asked basic questions. Well, the homes that were done by ANDP, initially through the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, now through a variety, are those eligible market comps? And the tax assessor said, sure, those are qualified values, even if they have a soft second, even if federal dollars were involved, we count them. And they said, well, you know what the value of each of the neighborhoods ANDP was involved with their sales. And yeah, we know what the value is. So the antithesis was, let's just pretend those NSP dollars, let's pretend the local government partners, let's pretend ANDP was not there, that those homes just were never touched. Pull them out of your valuation. And the chart is the next one, and the numbers are going to be hard for you to see. And we're just working with this student group to publish and pretty up their research, so we should have it on the Piece by Piece website, hopefully within a week or two. But what we saw was really very high impact for the number of homes that we had touched. In Douglas County, we did 12 home sales in 2010, 10 in 2011, 14 in 2012, 17 in 2013, and each time we hit between 9 and 15 neighborhoods. So we're doing one and two homes. For the most part, we're in the same neighborhoods over and over. And overall, we invested in the rehab, because any money we put in to buy the foreclosed home, that gets rotated back out. So the real value is, what did we invest in the rehab? And it was the improvements and our cost to manage the program and all of the cost in the rehab. And during those that time period, we invested $2.3 million in the rehab. Yet we went, Georgia Tech students came back and said, but you lifted the overall neighborhood values by $14.6 million. And so when someone asked the question, we had some real estate professionals, realtors, realtists here, y'all do amazing work. This is not just true of the ANDP sale. This is true of any home that someone goes and there's an improvement, and that home is later placed on the market, that you're going to see a multiplier effect. It varied by year, and it is as high as a multiplier effect of 12 times. And then each year we started bringing the values up, and so we saw the multiplier effect actually go down a little bit over the years, which was a good thing. It means we were starting to get more to a stabilization point. And so it shows that because there's so few other sales, that if we put ours in for the math, we're going to lift the values. We'll talk a little bit about how do you get those values appropriately up. Now, we're in the affordable housing business. We want our homes to be affordable, so the concept that, gee, we want to sell our homes for as much as the market will bear seems a little counterintuitive, but the reality is we're still selling homes for a monthly mortgage amount that is way below the rental market in Atlanta. Atlanta and Chicago are the two areas where it is 30% cheaper to buy than to own. And so we're creating affordable homeownership. Our homes are still $80,000 to $130,000. It's very affordable, but the impact is just not the now 488 families. We started with a six-home pilot. We're working on our 488th home. It's just not those, but each time there's a new homeowner, then the impact is for the neighbor next door and really that whole subdivision.
That's great. So when you're in these underwater neighborhoods, and we've seen from Adair Park, there's not a whole lot of activity. A few key transactions can have a major impact. And we had the question earlier, you know, how are you successfully getting appropriate appraisals, and how are you getting appraisals that appropriately reflect a home's value in these dynamic submarkets?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I'll be honest with you, there's not an answer, at least in my experience. So we meet with appraisers, and we're not supposed to. I shouldn't even say this, but we're not supposed to meet with appraisers, right? I like to say I've never sold a house that's gone into foreclosure, so I would think my reputation should mean something. But, you know, the comparable sales aren't there, really. The comparable sales are the properties that were sold in foreclosure last year or 2 years ago. And hopefully, because more and more people are using other resources like 203K loan programs, and they're increasing the value that way, the banks are starting to look at it a little bit more. So we've answered it a little bit. We don't have a complete answer to appraisals. That's a continuing issue for us.
So it's those personal relationships, both through you and with the broader community. John, are you seeing something similar in the appraisal?
Yeah, in our areas, we work with a variety of real estate professionals. We do not sell homes directly within our organization. We think folks who have those community contacts. And what they are reporting back is really hand-to-hand combat. And those that do it the best go and leave. You know, when you go in and you look at a home, there's all the paper and everybody leaves the cards. Well, when it's time for the appraiser to come, they go and leave the work product for the appraiser. And let me hit the industry, why it's changed. Currently, appraisers are hired at an arm's length by the financial institutions. And so the financial institutions have a relationship really with an appraisal company, and that appraisal company assigns appraisers. What used to be the appraiser got all the fee. Now that management company gets a portion of the fee. Used to be an appraisal focused just in one neighborhood. Now that appraiser has to drive and have other expenses. So the end result is they're spending most of their time on the computer just sort of pulling market comps. And what we do is show them the market comps, which are the needle in the haystack, that are the higher market comps because they've been developed with a new buyer in mind. And so there is, you know, you have to say, well, it may be one subdivision over, but the subdivisions are very comparable, and you can see the home in this subdivision sold way above the burnout foreclosure. That's also true in this neighborhood. And we're finding for our homes, aside from Thanksgiving through Valentine's, where it's hard to sell a home, but aside from that, we oftentimes get two or three offers at what we listed the price for. That's the market, willing buyer, willing seller. And generally, the appraisal will come in about 15% less than that. And then oftentimes, we can fight and pick up 5 to 10% of the value. But it's those real estate professionals that are really doing it and providing the information as you're doing. I think one of the follow-ups may be, how do we work at the national level and showcase Atlanta as a way to create some national systems to make sure that appraisers are incented to do it right in the middle to get the right price. Right now, many of their incentives are to come in low, because if they come in too high, they might be sued. But if they come in too low, we need to make sure that there's some risk there, that their reputation's at stake, and folks are saying you aren't doing your job right.
You know, Sarah, if I could add to that, in the local world where I live, we have relationships with other agents, other brokers, and we constantly have to stay informed with each other. So if I sell something that's somewhat on the high level and we have a new owner-occupant moving in, every agent that I've probably done more than two or three transactions with in the last year or so gets to know about that deal. And if somebody else closes a deal, they will pick up the phone or send an email out and broadcast it to everybody. So we have to communicate amongst ourselves to make sure that we can support those numbers. It's easy to do in a localized area. It's much harder to have that conversation, you know, when you're talking citywide. But we have actually figured out ways to partner with each other. So whether or not we're in that transaction, we're going to know about that transaction.
So you are aligned competitors, right? You're
we have
working
to be.
Together.
Didn't
That's
that
great.
Be.
Yeah.
So you mentioned access to more tools. You mentioned 203K. What other resources do you think are needed to get more owner-occupied residents in these transitional and underwater neighborhoods?
Well, so I have the benefit of not only specializing in Beltline neighborhoods, very affordable neighborhoods. I also have the benefit of traffic being a seven-day-a-week issue here in Atlanta, so more and more people are trying to move into in-town Atlanta. So when you have projects like the Beltline or the redevelopment of Fort McPherson or the Peachtree Streetcar, all those projects are bringing more and more attention to Southwest Atlanta or in-town Atlanta. I shouldn't just say Southwest, but Northwest Atlanta. All these neighborhoods that have been hardest hit that have great stock. You know, a lot of our neighborhoods on the south side of Atlanta mirror neighborhoods on the north side of Atlanta. So you find houses with amazing character that just haven't been loved for a little while. And through Committed to Communities and other efforts, we're letting more and more people know about these neighborhoods and these opportunities. And really, to be honest with you, word of mouth is the best thing. To be honest with you, Committed Communities was started because most of my buyers and other folks' buyers come from referrals of people that live in the neighborhoods. So trying to figure out a way to capture those other folks and making sure that everybody knew about these opportunities was really what we started out doing. So word of mouth is probably the best advertising we have for these neighborhoods. And then resources, you know, there's a gentleman by the name of Angel that a lot of Atlanta people know. And we actually did a Committed to Communities event in his house last year, or about 18 months ago. Angel bought a $14,000 house that sits on the Beltline in Adair Park. Backs up to the Beltline, faces the park. Angel probably has more broadcasting ability than I do. And when we had our event at Angel's house, he actually did a 203K loan. So through the help of Wells Fargo, and I don't want to just mention Wells Fargo because there are a lot of other lending institutions that do 203K products. So there's First Community Home Mortgage, I can't even rattle off all of them. But people learning more and more about those opportunities, Angel going in there and kind of cutting out the middleman, so Angel didn't have to rely on an investor to come and buy his house and do the renovation for him. Angel got in there, bought a house for $14,000, got a loan, a rehab loan of somewhere close to $140,000, and turned what was really an eyesore in the neighborhood. I don't want to tell you guys too much of the history of that neighborhood, but directly next door to Angel was a blue house that was known as the blue house where all the negative activity in the neighborhood happened at. So Angel moving in next door, spending his time and his resources, bringing more and more people through there. Not only were we able to renovate and get Angel moved in, but the house directly next door to him, that used to be the problem house, we had that one taken off the market for code enforcement issues or put on the market for code enforcement issues. So now we have a new resident that's in there, and he also used the 203K loan. So it's kind of spreading like wildfire when you actually get those examples, especially those success stories out there, and that's a little bit what we try to do. Mm-hmm.
John, are there other lending products that you think are needed to help continue the positive momentum?
Yeah, a couple of other strategies. First, we need to stop, and when we have some success, and celebrate. FHA is here today, Ed and the team at HUD. They lowered the premium for mortgage insurance by 0.5 percentage point, and so when you're in a 4.5% rate environment, you know, we lowered the cost of home ownership 8 or 10%. That makes a difference. You got the Federal Housing Finance Agency working with Fannie and Freddie. Down payment is a big deal now. You want to make sure that people are paired with counselors and that they can manage it. We want positive outcomes. But that's really historic movement, that we're offering low down payments but also requiring that counseling go with that. DCA's here. If you look at not only their portfolio but other state housing finance agencies, they really didn't have very many foreclosures in the loans they offered to low and moderate income home buyers because they've been using a counseling model all along, and so their loans performed well. There is a lack of capital for the private sector and for not-for-profits to come in and take these homes and to acquire them in rehab. The NSP program is starting to go away. Some local governments are reusing home dollars that had oftentimes gone into multifamily to single family. That's a good practice. It needs to go both ways. But there is a lack of capital. And we're finding in Atlanta, there's a hotter escalation, and so the private sector may be coming in. Clayton County, you can get a really nice home for $50,000. The values are going up slowly, but they are going up, so it's a good real estate bet. But right now, because of the appraisal and other issues, there's not a large profit to be made. So how can you get scale? We're trying to work with the equity investors who are very smart, have good computer modeling, good rehab skill sets. How do you use that industry to provide a home ownership option and get more of those homes into home ownership? Great question and discussion around that. How can not-for-profit loan providers and private also provide capital for other, you know, private and not-for-profits to come in and acquire these homes and rehab them and sell them for a small profit? We as a not-for-profit can break even. The private sector needs to do a little bit better than that, and we need the private sector back in.
Derek, there are a lot of communities represented here. If you were to consult them on how they might replicate the Committed to Communities model, and in addition to some of the things you've shared, if you were to pick that up and put it in another neighborhood, how would you advise someone to learn from your experience? How might they get started? How can there be some scale to replicating your success?
That's a good question. I'd probably say the first thing to do is recognize your resources, right? So if, in my case, we have Invest Atlanta, we have the Beltline. Invest Atlanta brings the down payment assistance that makes it easier for more and more buyers to buy. The Beltline's bringing more and more people. It's kind of like the trail that brings people in to discover a new part of town that's been around for 100 years, right? recognize the amenities that are in these areas. Mm-hmm. So in what I do, we recognize the parks, we recognize the transit, we recognize the schools, we recognize the restaurants, we recognize the lenders, we recognize it could be just the families in the neighborhoods. So a lot of our success is based on a proven fact that the neighbors really sell the neighborhood. So getting to know the people that live in these communities, the people that have been around for a long time. You know, we have continuing issues when we talked about when we talk about gentrification. There's a lot of people that have been living in these neighborhoods for, you know, when we talk about Pittsburgh, people that have been there for 30 years, if not longer, right? And the fact that now there's something successful and something that's uplifting coming to their neighborhood, recognizing those opportunities or those individuals and making sure that they can actually experience a little bit of that positivity happening. Yeah, I'd say the people in the neighborhood, the resources in the neighborhood, the resources in the city, and what's going on in the city, whether it's a comprehensive development plan or what have you. And then, of course, in my world, it's the realtors, right? So the realtors are the ones that bring the buyers, so engaging the realtors. And, you know, one thing that every realtor and broker I've been dealing with recognizes is that there's so much inventory that if I wanted to, I couldn't sell it all. So the fact that I might partner with other folks and have those relationships and I benefit from every single transaction that happens, whether I'm involved or not. So it's really recognizing what's already on the ground. It's probably the simple answer.
It's back to all those partnerships that we talked about earlier this morning. John, in Doug Hooker's closing remarks, he mentioned how Home Depot was focused on getting police and veterans into housing, and you, through ANDP, have been addressing housing needs of veterans specifically. Can you tell us a little bit about that program and yeah. how it's impacted the neighborhoods?
Yeah, whenever you can serve a veteran, you sort of, you know, get that connection. We're trying to work on regional issues, but when you serve that family who served the country and connect them, what we found with the veterans population, and there are other populations that are like this, they are underserved, don't get the information on the soft second program, don't get the information on the loan modification program, don't connect with all the folks that go to the housing meetings because they've developed a network within the veteran community. And to break in, we really need to make relationships within the veteran service organizations, those serving formerly homeless, on up to, you know, folks that may be eligible for an NSP home. And we've set targets within our organization to do a significant number of our homes each year to veterans. And it's just amazingly aligned with our mission because it's giving us a larger pool, actually an underserved pool, in which to get new homeowners, in some instances new renters. And the gambit runs from a formerly homeless veteran with a VASH voucher that is going to be in rental housing because they need to work on their credit and they need to keep the job that they have for a while before homeownership, to some folks that, you know, were Korean and almost World War II veterans that are coming back and are on a fixed income, and the home ownership opportunity is a way for them to reduce their housing price and get back into the market. Maybe they had been one time before. And this year our target is 25 of our homes are going to go to veteran families, and we've got the number on the wall, and I'll do a cheer each time we can flip it over and do one more. But there are other ways that we are that come and work in real estate can connect. We heard it earlier. How do we connect to the schools? How do we connect to healthcare? How do we connect to veteran or other underserved populations? And we need to see that as an alignment of our mission as opposed to something that's distracting, because it literally meets our goal of lifting communities, but we can also do it in serving veterans.
Derek, we've talked about leveraging new market comps and better telling the neighborhood story for people who may not know the history or the infrastructure investments coming. Are there other ways that realtors or nonprofits or others can engage to increase values that we should talk about in this group?
There are definitely other ways. You know, again, going back to relationships and the fact that I'm sitting up here with John and all the power and the resources that an ANDP brings to the table, those relationships have been invaluable for me, right? Like, it's whether it's ULI, you know, whether it's the local universities and colleges. Local universities and colleges have all the talent in the world and students looking for opportunities to get involved. And like John said, they can do more than lick envelopes. So from our perspective, we've been making sure that we reach out to everybody. You know, forgive me, but Ms. Chubb sitting over there, she's going to hear from me very soon, whether I have to call her from John's phone or from my phone. we're going to figure that out. But those are amazing resources, right?
Right.
You know, I deal with 90% of what I do is I deal with the people trying to move into the neighborhood. But those people that bought houses 10 years ago that have that negative equity, it's important for me to figure out ways to keep them there because they're the ones that bring the other buyers. So I'm going to make sure I'm going to help you guys reach that goal by the end of 2017. I promise you that. So I don't know if that completely answers the question.
From your mouth to God's ear, right?
Yeah, and I'll correct. We do not have all the resources. We're like everybody else in this room. We've got a staff of 12 people, and all of us are trying to do a Herculean, oversized job with small resources because the resources do not meet the demand. And whenever ANDP has success, the one word in our name that we do best is the partnership. A lot of other things we don't always get right, but if you get the partnership right, then the power is, you know, you're working alongside people, and together we are going to make a difference, and we are going to lift that rate. You know, there are other things we haven't had. It's a busy agenda, but there's been some research done by the Reinvestment Fund that talks about the impact of demolition. So you sort of think, demolition, you get rid of the bad stuff, that's a good crime reduction. It's been proven to lift values in the neighborhood. So if our goal is to lift values, and we've got Frank Alexander working and advising local governments who are focused on code enforcement, well, that's part of this lifting values that we're doing it on the for sale side. We need to do a better job of taking the Douglas research done by Georgia Tech Student Group, and even if they got it 100% right, folks are going to say, okay, it's undergraduate students, and we're actually partnering with the Urban Land Institute and one of their leadership groups to sort of take that study to the next level, because we checked around nationally. Has anyone really looked at a simple model to determine what the sale of a quality home in an underwater neighborhood does to lift values? Well, if we've uncovered something that's pretty powerful, we need to get the research to tell that story. NeighborWorks was instrumental to the counseling industry. Everybody sort of knew it made a difference. People could look at some of the results in programs like DCA had, but there hadn't been the research done. And to get more resources, we've got to tell our story and be analytical and come up with a research that supports the successful models.
I think at this point we want to open it up to any questions that there may be from the audience. We still have the two microphones open for questions, advice, observations as to what ANDP is doing and Derek's success through Committed to Communities. I guess, you know, John, you, if anyone wants to come up to the microphones, if not, we'll continue chatting amongst ourselves. But John, you talked a little bit about scale, about the metrics that the equity investors are bringing. Any observations or strategies you think that we need to be digging deeper on to reach greater scale? It is the onesie, twosie, you know, by neighborhood. It's a different approach in a suburban environment than it may be in an urban environment. And when we look at that map that we saw this morning, it does feel rather Herculean.
Yep.
Do you think the research is pointing to that if you can, you know, stabilize values with a couple of homes, that's going to make a difference? Any other scale we need to be thinking about?
So as a not-for-profit, we see the need and we think about scale all the time. And the historic model had been if you wanted to serve some of these needs, you needed a subsidy source. You needed federal government dollars. And unfortunately, I don't see another $4 billion going to NSP right now. So we're like, okay, that's not going to be there. You need home dollars. Those have been cut in half. You need charitable dollars. And in some communities, the philanthropic community is heavily engaged in community development. Frankly, in the Southeast, you see a little bit less engagement. But we've uncovered the opportunity through our work with a small developer, I don't know if Joe Sands is still here, he was at this conference, and with a large equity developer. So these are private sector folks who sort of understand value, who understand what new homeowners are looking for. They don't understand governmental programs. And we've done some experimentation. Could we work with these folks, but ANDP own the home, sell it at the NSP price tag, so we're still doing the mission, still similar to the government programs, in the neighborhoods that are underwater, and do break even or better? Now, we've had a small pilot, and so we've done 7 homes in one, and another, we have a 7-home pilot. We've only disposed of 4 or 5. But so far, the success has been, they've all been break even or better. And so then if we can do that, and we've got partners that can scale up in the private sector, and some counselors can continue to provide the counseling, and you hook people up, then the limit to scale is financing for the venture that makes sense. And it was mentioned that we had dollars for a low-income trust fund. There were also dollars that came out for a capital magnet fund. That could be such a source. There are new markets tax credits. That's a whole nother 6 hours before I even understand it, but could be a source for some of this work. Mm-hmm. There's 203K, Paul Weech mentioned, that could be used by not-for-profit to acquire and rehab, and that's a low cost of financing. So we're spending a lot of time, Tayani Sumas in the back of the room, trying to think, how do we get the financing now that we've got some of the other ingredients together?
Excellent. Yes.
Hi, my name is Annie Barber, and I'm giving an event for Stand Down Homeless Veterans in South Bend Park in the Lakewood Heights community.
Fabulous.
And I do have a nonprofit. So my question is, how do I, partner with you with this?
Great. So what we would love to do, piece by piece, A, can help you communicate your event. We've got a calendar item that if you aren't on the website, that gets to 2,000 folks that are involved in housing so that others will know your event's going on and can help steer folks who may be needed. Susan Adams, who wears many hats here, she's helping with George to pull this event today, has also helped us get up to speed and be a little bit of an expert on veterans issues. And so we've uncovered some veteran service organizations and folks you may partner with. And so we actually have an informal working group of people that are working with veterans to share what we're doing together. Sometimes we need to do it ourselves and let others know. Sometimes we need to all work together. So we'd love to get your card and have a side conversation and get you connected to that veterans group. That's fabulous.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, Joe Stoner again. I wanted to ask you the same question I asked earlier. You haven't talked much about renters in this particular panel, but what are you doing to make renters a more inclusive and supportive and value-raising part of the communities?
I think when the question came up before, we should all want to make sure that people have options, and ANDP has developed as many units of rental housing through our history as we have in homeownership. And we continue to work. We're going to be applying to try to get financing for a new rental opportunity for family that's got some other amenities, so that's very important. Frankly, though, as I look at the underwater crisis, that's not the only crisis facing our communities. You can go to other areas. Detroit's less underwater than us. Detroit's got a lot of problems, so rental's very important. But as you look at sort of the underwater neighborhoods, my sense is that the balance is a little out of kilter, and that because of the equity investors, because home ownership has been stripped in many of the underwater neighborhoods, you need to be attentive to both, but maybe the home ownership needs a little bit more, while there are other areas that it's less about underwater homeowners and it's more about broader community issues and revitalization and affordable housing, and particularly if you're on the MARTA line and things where you can connect renters to opportunity and lower transportation costs. So it's not an either or, but I think in each neighborhood we have to determine what's the right strategy and what's the right mix. And so renters do need to be a part.
You know, if I can add to that, so of course I work in the for sale industry, right? So I make my money on the sales. But my neighborhood recognizes the importance of people being displaced. So one of my neighbors came to me probably about 6 months ago with the idea of creating housing opportunities for buying opportunities for renters in the neighborhood. So I have an example of a husband and wife in my neighborhood. They've been renting a 700 square foot portion of a house for 16 years, been paying over $650 a month for 16 years. And for the most part, 2 years ago, they could have bought any house in the neighborhood. So we've actually put together a home buying class for a lot of the renters in the neighborhood. As the neighborhood continues to change, we will make sure that some of those people have the opportunity to stay there. So you have a little bit more freedom as a homeowner than you do as a renter. So yeah, we've just started. We did our first class. I actually did our first two classes in the last 2 months. We're actually spreading that out to other neighborhoods now. So we're going to be at Perkinson Elementary School next month, meeting with, I believe, about 17 different parents from that school and talk about the opportunities to buy in that neighborhood. So my focus is almost always on the sales side of it, but we're planting seeds with people that have been there for a long time and giving those opportunities to them as well.
And I think we're seeing on the public sector side, folks being more purposeful about including renters in community engagement. You know, I think we had a history of perhaps really focusing on owners as being those who had a voice in the future of their communities. And I think particularly over this last development cycle, you've seen folks being a lot more purposeful about making sure you're hearing the full spectrum of voices about, you know, what choices should be made for communities and how that should progress. And I think we've evolved in the region in that respect, and that's been a good thing because there are renters who are very invested in their communities, obviously. Yeah, I think we have time for one last question. Yes, sir.
Yes, one last. Tillman Ward again with another hat from the Vine City Civic Association. I know we're focusing on neighborhoods underwater. Of course, when you say underwater, Vine City has another meaning. In terms of
Proctor Creek,
Adair Park, we're asked today to support the bond referendum. The first thing they mention is streets, bridges, and parks, which relates to art. At least two bridges in the Adair Park area I know need some love and attention, as you mentioned. Near Georgia Tech, where we mentioned we had students looking from another view, a different view and a good view, there's a bridge right at Donald Hollowell and Northside Drive, which connect to that reviving area. Do you have any statistics or any market to support, as you mentioned, when you save a underwater house, family, the like? Do you have any statistics on the walkability? If you connected or made the bridges interesting and safe, did that add to the desirability of a neighborhood? And lastly, I think Park Pride has good information on what open space, green space can mean. But it means a lot more when people are viably employed. If they're not employed, then this green space becomes resting space, which is not the most desirable use that we have. But statistics on what value do you add by connecting these bridges and whether or not you were able to in your networking to make sure that these bridges that are in need of love and attention are on this bond list, because a lot of us didn't get information on what was on the list, but we just need to vote yes for it.
Well, sort of wearing another hat, I work for the Urban Land Institute, which is an education and research organization, and you know, ULI is highly focused on advancing walkable communities, transit-oriented development, and there has been a lot of research done. You know, your point that, and I think Ed Jennings started us off with saying, you know, number one is about jobs. So yes, it has to be an economically, you know, viable situation, but outside of that, you know, there are absolute premiums associated with parks. The number that sticks out in my head is a 23% premium. Don't quote me on that, because that's, you know, what I recall. But, you know, walkable communities, Chris Leinberger with the Brookings Institute has done an enormous amount of work around the country on the value of what he calls walk-ups, walkable urban places. He has a national report on that. He just issued one on walk-ups in Boston. And walkable urban places absolutely garner premiums over their counterparts. So investing in that infrastructure, and I would argue investing in the infrastructure that is most conducive to how people want to live in the future, right? They want to have options about how they get around, whether that's access to transit or if it's being more walkable. And in Atlanta, you've seen it in a really dramatic way of how we've developed in this last cycle. I think it is something like 80-some-odd% of our development has occurred in walkable urban places in the past 7 years. And so you do get that, you know, tale of two cities where you're seeing places that are having a lot of disinvestment and those that are seeing dramatic investment. And one key difference is that walkable infrastructure. So I think it is a, you know, when we go down the list of ways to increase value, I think that's certainly among them. I defer to my fellow panelists as to whether or not, you know, they see that in a meaningful way, but I think the Beltline speaks to that. And just generally the, you know, people want to live where they have greater access to sort of a healthy lifestyle, and parks and ability to walk are key components of that. And I think Atlanta's doing a pretty good job of trying to move in that direction.
I think I completely agree with you. And if you actually look at other best practices, all the cities are recognizing the importance of walkability, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Atlanta's kind of coming into the fold, and we're doing a much, much better job. And if you look at the stability of some of the neighborhoods when we went through the crisis, some of the neighborhoods that kept their value the best were the ones that had some type of walkability component to it. The great thing about the Beltline project, and something that I know about, is actually a historic preservation and saving and maintaining some of those bridges. So some of them are actually being recognized by some of the different components going on in the city.
And, you know, the city's got just so many wonderful things happening, like the Beltline. For other portions of the region that are a little bit further out, some good news, Clayton's connected to MARTA. We learned in Decatur that there was this asset and you could create a place to walk to and saw what happened. And so there are town centers and places that could be good places to walk through throughout the region. ARC has really been a leader in that work, but part of what we need to do for the whole region, because it's a big area, it's just not the center, is we need to connect a lot of neighborhoods to something that's worth walking. So that's about commercial development. That's about providing jobs. It's about some of that interconnectivity that we've heard today. And the approach in Clayton County may be different than the Beltline, but the concepts are essentially the same.
Well, so as we close, anything we haven't talked about that I think this group should be thinking about, or any remaining issues related to lifting to home values that we haven't talked about that you've been dying to get off your chest, either of you?
I think I'm good for the moment.
We've covered it.
You are very good. I just encourage us, as we see this daunting task, when there is a success, and there have been a lot of successes recently, let's celebrate the success, but don't substitute the success for victory. We've got, this is not a this year thing. Our hope is it's only a next 5 year thing. If we're successful, it's only a next 5 year thing. If we aren't successful, it's an issue for the next generation.
All right. Thank you,
Sarah.
Very much.